Welcome, indie gamers, to a very outside of the big box episode 139 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where we are going to attempt to prove that just because it's an indie game doesn't necessarily mean it isn't serious business. I'm Cam, filling in for Tom, who's currently hibernating in his cave in preparation for the coming PAX season.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And today we have two very special co-hosts, Brian and Clayton from Overworld Games. Welcome, guys.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us.
We are very happy to have you guys here tonight. Brian, just because we have another Brian on the show, I'm going to go ahead and call you Overworld Brian. Is that all right?
Sounds perfect.
All right, great. Just so there's no confusion going forward. And speaking of confusion, let's make an awkward segue into our weekly Geekly Weekly roundup, where we talk about the events of the past week that we went through. Brian, why don't you kick us off?
I have had a pretty simple week. I got a bunch of stuff to paint for Christmas, and I finally got around to kind of organizing some of that and getting it out. So I have been doing a little preparation work on my Dynamo, which is a Signar Heavy Jack, if anybody plays War Machine.
Yes, sir.
And on my endless supply of Robotech stuff, probably the most overwhelming task I've ever taken. I did not realize how much work would be involved in Zendrati cannon fodder and three copies of everything I paint for the UEDF.
But like we've said many times, it's a labor of love, and you're killer at that. I wish I had the fine motor skills you do. Mine looks like a third grader does it whenever I try to paint a miniature.
Well, thank you. This might be too much. These Robotech are daunting, to say the least.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check it out. I haven't seen your work yet, Brian.
I'll bring some in.
You know, and on top of that, Cam, the big key to a lot of painting is patience. So I'm up to fifth grader level now.
Yeah, I'm not even close to that. I'm Hulk smash after about 2 minutes. What else have you been up to, Brian?
That's about it. I don't think it's so much patience as it is tons and tons of time.
Yeah. All right. So, Chris, what about you? What you been up to?
Well, like I mentioned last week, I checked out Man in the High Castle, the Amazon pilot episode for the Philip K. Dick book. I liked it. It had the expected twist at the end of the episode that, spoilers, I can't give away. But I invite people to check it out, not only because it was decent sci-fi, but also because it's part of a contest where you vote for the pilots, and the ones that get the best votes become full-on series on Amazon Prime.
Very cool.
And then on top of that, I was listening to my audio book, from the library, and, it ran out. So I switched from what I was reading to Alloy of Steel, which is, part of the Mistborn series.
Yep.
And it's set in a Western. And this is really weird because, a lot of people are saying that the literary Western genre has been dead almost as long as it was alive, you know, for 60 years. But I see that comic books are doing a lot of things with it. I can think of three different comic book titles off the top of my head that are experimenting with it. And I'm going to call it now. I think that there's going to be the next genre coming up after steampunk is going to be some sort of superhero mashup. You know, kind of like a fantasy meets superheroes sort of style of storytelling.
Well, that sounds like something I'd be into, so I hope your prediction comes true. Anything else?
Nope.
All right, Overworld Brian and Clayton, what have you guys been up to? I'm assuming a lot of Kickstarter stuff.
It's crazy when you have a Kickstarter campaign and you're running it. It pretty much takes over your life, you know. And for me, I go to a few game nights every week, but once a campaign comes around, I just have to, you know, completely stop. So I'm kind of going crazy, not being able to play games.
I know the feeling.
The only thing that that I have been playing actually is Star Realms on my iPhone. I don't know if anybody else has that, but I am completely addicted to that now.
Oh yeah, Brian and I both
love the game, love the app.
The app's actually available for the Humble Bundle right now.
Is it really? Very cool.
Yep, pay what you want.
Yep, and they just came out with a whole bunch of new like little booster packs for the actual tabletop game and. A really cool card box that I picked up with that came with some promos, so I'm looking forward to getting that in the mail. Sweet. What about you, Clayton? Same thing?
Well, my game collection is actually embarrassingly small, so I finally got around to picking up Smash Up. So that's what I've been playing mostly for the last week. Played it with my kids a few times. They got into it, played it a few more times, and they said, quit asking me to play this. That's kind of where we're at now.
Excellent.
I get to play it about every 2-3 days now. They're kind of over it.
Gotcha. That's actually a great segue into my weekly roundup, because I spent most of the last week preparing for and then engaging in Magic City Comic Con, which is a newer con down here in South Florida. And I did play some Smash Up in the tabletop gaming area. I love that game. And but mostly I was there in a work/professional capacity. I was doing work for Julia Rose, who is the head of the Doctor Who track, over Will Bryan and Clayton. Just so you guys know, I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. Obviously Chris and Brian know, cause I annoy them with it like every week. But, I was a panelist on some of the panels that they had there. Otherwise I was helping Julia, you know, work the track and make sure everything ran well, over the course of the con, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the absolute highlight of my weekend was getting to meet and speak with, Karen Gillan for a few minutes, getting a great photo with her. And, I also was able to meet, Colin Baker, who's the Sixth Doctor. It was a great weekend.
I am jealous, not so much that you got to meet the celebrity, but that your Facebook post generated so much traffic.
I'm sure it wasn't because of my ugly mug, but, you know, she's quite a looker. I'm sure that's what it was.
Think you got more likes and comments than I got all week.
Overall, Brian and Clayton, are you guys familiar with Doctor Who? Do you know who Karen Gillan is?
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't know who Karen Gillan is. I just Googled her, but yeah. I've watched some Doctor Who, and I really like the episodes, but it just seems like it would be so overwhelming to try to get into that series, you know, starting basically from scratch. So I haven't done that. I hope to one day, but I haven't yet.
It is a serious commitment. I would suggest not even worrying about the previous Doctors. If you wanted to get into it and you have Netflix, just start with the 2005 reboot, which starts with the Ninth Doctor, who's Christopher Eccleston, and go forward from there. I mean, even that is a pretty huge commitment, but if you're really talking about doing that and then going back and watching Doctors 1-8, it's pretty daunting, but I can't say enough good stuff about Doctor Who, but enough of my nerdy pursuits. Let's move into this week's news extravaganza. Brian, what do you got on the news front this week?
I am just so interested in this Cones of Dunshire thing that's going on. It's a Kickstarter for a game made popular by a television show, but the company's not taking it seriously. It's Mayfair Games, and everyone's asked them, like, it's in the fact of the Kickstarter, is this a joke? And their answer is yes and no, but mostly no. So it's very interesting, because it is actually getting money, and I don't know if that's because people think they can pledge safely knowing it'll never be taken from them, or what's going on with that.
Yeah, I think it's got to be a gaffe. I mean, first of all, their goal is like $300,000, which this is ridiculous. And on top of that, it just looks like a shitty game. I mean, look, it's not anything I'd want to play. So I think they're just trying to just generate some buzz, I would think.
$500 buy-in.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to do that? Ridiculous.
Well, Mayfair is known for its promo. I mean, they got this whole thing with Christmas ornaments, in case you didn't know about it. You pay $60 for this gorgeous, like, brass die-cut Christmas ornament every year, if you want.
Yeah, not something on my Christmas list, that's for sure. What else, Brian? Anything else in the news that struck your fancy?
That is all I've been doing.
Chris, what about you, buddy?
Two things. I'll go with the pop culture one first. Marvel has basically said that after this upcoming Secret Wars crossover, that all of the Marvel universes will be rolled into one. But they're not calling it a reboot. They're saying everything in the past has already happened, but going forward, in fact, during Secret Wars, evidently all the Earths have become something called the Battle World, with different territories and different versions of bits and pieces of their universe stuck together. So, you know, people are guessing what they're going to do next, whether it's going to be, you know, kind of picking the most favorite versions of things, or whether this is an opportunity to include some diversity. There's rumors that Peter Parker's finally going to retire, and it's going to be Miles Morales that's going to take on the Spider-Man mantle. Or if this is just a savvy way to cut Sony out of the picture, since Sony's sitting on that Spider-Man cash.
Yep.
And then the other thing is DARPA's walking robot, the Atlas, is now officially tether-free. Basically, our robot overlords are coming to us sooner than we thought. Their military, you know, R&D for walking robots doesn't have a safety tether. It can walk on its own 2 feet for now. And their upcoming challenges for people who want to compete in their version of the robot Olympics, now they have to be able to also be tether-free and work in an environment where the secure wireless network slowly degrades to represent disaster and battlefield conditions.
Wow. Well, that segues sort of nicely into my news, news stories. Apparently for the low, low price of $1 million, you can buy a real life mech suit from Amazon Japan. The manufacturer is Tsutobashi Heavy Industry, and they've made a Gundam mech suit called the Kuritas. It's an actual functioning mech suit you can buy and I guess walk around your neighborhood in, which I think is pretty great. Star Wars Battle Pod just dropped in an arcade near you. It looks pretty stunning. I'm really hoping that one of the local arcades here will end up getting one. It looks really killer from the different videos I've seen. What else have I seen in the news here? I don't know if any of you guys are into League of Legends, but apparently somebody injected some malware into the official downloads. Wow. For League of Legends. So, you know, you could be on the official League of Legends website and be downloading games, and you get stuck with some malware. So if you are a League of Legends player, make sure you fire up your Norton. And lastly, did you guys know that we are all going to die in about 27 years, I think? There is a asteroid that is going to pass, 1.2 million kilometers of Earth, within Earth, you know, hopefully it'll miss us. So have fun until then, I guess. Right, guys? I'll throw it now over to Overworld Brian and Clayton. What do you guys got?
Well, my biggest news thing that I've been paying attention to is also the Cones of Dunshire, like Brian mentioned. And, you know, when I look at it, I remember seeing that they had kind of demoed it, I think, at Gen Con. And I thought that it was such a brilliant idea to take something from a popular TV show and make something of it. But I feel like it probably could have been made into a real game that is fun and still kind of capitalize on the buzz around that TV show. But to me, it just doesn't look like that's what's happening.
This is a weird campaign. I'm not sure why they would make such a joke out of it.
I don't understand. I feel like there's a lot of potential there. There really is. They could have picked it up and ran with it, and I don't know, maybe they thought it would turn out differently, and I guess I've never seen anything quite like it, and I wouldn't have been sure what to expect until I saw it either, so maybe they just decided to try it out.
And Mayfair does seem to do some kind of weird things sometimes with their marketing. I'm not saying it's bad, it's just, you know, kind of unique, so I'm not that surprised that this happened.
Yeah, well, here we are talking about it, so
right,
we got
it's working.
That's true. Yeah. So one story I thought was interesting that I came across when my friend showed it to me. The Green Bay Packers, since it is football season, have been playing a lot of Settlers of Catan, and I thought that was really interesting. The New York Times had an article, and for one thing, you know, the New York Times talking about, you know, tabletop game, a hobby game. That right there is pretty cool. But they described the Packers actually, you know, being very concerned about strategy in the game and, you know, being really competitive, which, you know, that isn't super surprising. But, you know, it just shows how tabletop gaming, I guess, is becoming a big part of our culture, like, you know, popular culture, too. So it's really good for the industry, but I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, the quote in the article is, somebody said, Well, now that the Packers play, it's a safe thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Now we just need to get, the Steelers to do some Dungeons and Dragons, and then that's it. We've won the world.
That was fun-filled news segment, but now let's get to the meat and potatoes of the episode, which is the indie gaming industry and why we have our special, very special guest host, Overworld Brian and Clayton here from Overworld Games, to talk about their great new game, Good Cop, Bad Cop, Bombers and Traitors, which is currently on Kickstarter. And we, of course, here at the Nerd Extravaganza, encourage everyone to go check out their page, their campaign page at Kickstarter.com. Just look up Good Cop, Bad Cop, Bombers and Traitors, Overworld Games, anything like that, and I'm sure it'll come up. And we'll also link their campaign to the show notes below. And you can check out the game. But even better, we have the creators here that are going to talk to us about it and join in our discussion in of indie gamers living in a big box world, the challenges of you know, creating an indie game, the challenges of competing with the big box retailer game makers, and even you know, breaking into cons, because, you know, from what I've seen lately in the cons, they've really sort of gone away from gaming, and you know, it's going to be a challenge to sort of to bring that back. So without further ado, Brian and Overworld Brian and Clayton, why don't you tell us a little bit about Good Cop, Bad Cop, Bombers and Traitors?
Yeah, sure. I can start out. So we successfully funded the base game Good Cop, Bad Cop back in May of last year. So that wasn't even too long ago. It feels like ages ago, but we had a pretty modest funding goal, $3,000, and what did we get, Clayton, for our, you know, offhand, what we ended up getting? Just over 6,000, was it?
Yeah, it was right around the 6,000 mark.
So I mean, when you think about most Kickstarter campaigns, that's, you know, pretty low, but it was our first campaign, and you know, we were, you know, completely pretty much unknown entities in the gaming world, so, you know, it's not surprising, but we were able to find a way that we could have a very low funding goal, just to make sure we could get it funded, and then anything beyond that, you know, is just kind of icing, and then ever since then, it's really taken off, and we're completely out of stock and have been for a few months, so we're doing everything we can to get that back in stock, and it's very close now to being back on store shelves, and then we're now launching this expansion. And so the expansion adds a couple new roles. So in Good Cop, Bad Cop, I can give you just a quick rundown of how it works, but you have three integrity cards in front of you, and that'll tell you whether you're an honest cop or a crooked cop. And then one person around the table is the leader of the honest team, the agent, and somebody else is the leader of the crooked team, the kingpin. And so everybody's is duking it out. There's a few guns in the center of the table, but not enough for everybody. So you have to strategically get a gun at the right time, figure out who is the leader of the opposing team. So if you're an honest cop, you're looking for that kingpin. So you can take them out. And if you are a crooked cop, you're looking for that agent to take them out. And the first person to do that will win. So this expansion, will add some, two new roles, the suicide bomber, who is actually trying to get shots, and the traitor, who is trying to stay hidden and survive. If either the bomber or the traitor, accomplishes their goal, they win alone. So they're actually not honest or crooked. They're on their own team. So you have to play good cop, bad cop, but now keep an eye out for these other two roles, which add, you know, the tiny bit of complexity, but it adds a lot to the game, too. It's really for once you've played a little good cop, bad cop, these new roles really spice things up, change the game, and add some new equipment as well. I didn't really talk about equipment, but equipment's a card. Everybody gets one at the beginning of the game. It will give you a special ability that you can use it at any time during the game. So we added some new equipment to help the bomber and the traitor accomplish their goals, and hopefully through some stretch goals we'll add quite a bit more equipment as well.
Brian, I have to say, my favorite part of the game is definitely the equipment. because that's really what throws a monkey wrench into the best laid plans of mice and men, you know? It just, you can think you've got the agent figured out and you're ready to kill him, and then bam, someone hits you with an equipment card and it just totally screws up your world. Like, you could end up then being switched over to the good side, or, you know, you might not be able to shoot that, you're ready to shoot the agent, but then now you've got to redirect your gun and shoot someone else. And it really throws a lot of fun into the game when someone drops one of those equipment cards on you and you're like, oh man, you know, it's great.
Yeah, and it's also the most delicate part about the design of the game too. A lot of people just want more and more equipment. And they, you know, we have 16 equipment cards in the game, and, you know, a lot of people have said they want more. But we also want to limit it so that you don't get a whole bunch of those, what we call bullet stopping equipment cards, where at the end of the game, it kind of feels like it's just random, you know, that you don't really have control over ending the game, and accomplishing your objectives. And it's just kind of random. So that's why, you know, we do want to limit it. So we have a kind of spread out how many investigate type equipment cards we have, how many of those bullet stopping cards, and then how many of the kind of utility ones or changing team type equipment cards.
Right.
That's been the biggest challenge, to make sure that works. And we have a good set now. We have to be careful, you know, which ones we add and how many of each and that kind of thing too.
Right. And I noticed, on the set that you guys graciously, sent us to play with and you know, do a review video for, which also, to the listeners will be, linked below in the show notes. You have little specifications on the card. So, you know, it denotes which one is the actual expansion equipment card and which one is not. So that way, you know, if you wanted to just play a base game, you could take those out, and that way the game wouldn't be unbalanced or screwy. Let me ask you guys, in the Kickstarter campaign, is the base game going to come with the expansion, or is this just going to be, is it going to be the expansion only and you'll need the base game? Or I'm assuming there'll probably be campaign levels where you can get both.
The base game, if you already have it, you can get just the expansion, but we will definitely have a level to get both. And if you have the first edition of Good Cop, Bad Cop, the second edition is what we'll be offering with the Bombers and Traitors campaign.
Okay.
And so we have some upgraded components. The box is a little bit bigger so that you can put all the cards from the expansion and the base game together if you want to. We are upgrading the box and some of the components for the second print run too. So even if you have the first one, if you want those upgraded components, you can get those too.
Yeah, I really liked the upgraded components, the bigger gun cards, the bigger investigator cards. You know, just the feel of the cards, I thought it was great. And I like that you guys had a bigger box, so you can sort of put everything together into one little place that you can, you know, have for your game bag or your shelf. But I also like the size of the original game, because it's almost basically the size of a deck of cards, right? You can just put that in your pocket and go to your game night and not have to worry about it. So I think I guess my suggestion would be buy both, right? have the original and then have the expansion. So, you know, depending on what you're doing, you have options. Guys, let's sort of get into our topic a little bit. You know, you guys as indie game developers, you know, what do you see as the major challenges that you guys have faced, you know, in this ever-changing landscape of you know, big box store retailers, of, you know, huge gaming houses that, you know, are just gobbling each other up, like, you know, Asmodee and Fantasy Flight just merged a few months ago. You know, what do you see as the biggest challenges facing you guys now? And, you know, what do you see the landscape of the gaming industry looking like in the future?
It's a really good question. I don't think anybody knows the answer to that right now. With the mergers that we've seen, things are going to change, and it's going to be exciting to see how they change. But, you know, we're going to watch it very closely, but I don't think it's really going to affect us in what we want to do. You know, Clayton and I are, you know, still working our, you know, full-time jobs, and, you know, we're doing this as a hobby right now. Hopefully it's going to turn into a full-time job in the future, but we're really in no hurry to make that happen. And so, you know, we're just going to keep making games, you know, that we think people are going to enjoy, and not worry too much about, you know, growing too quickly either. You know, we want to make good games. We want to make games that people will really, really, really have fun playing, and not just put out anything. So we're going to spend our time on quality, and, you know, put out a few games, but not try to move faster than, you know, we feel comfortable. That, I guess that's what we plan to do, just to not worry too much about it right now. It's a, you know, they're just so big, and we're just not there. We're not going to try to compete with them in any way.
Gotcha. Have you guys been approached by any of the big houses that, you know, might want, you know, to publish your game, and or have you guys just, you know, just keeping your head down, doing your own thing, doing the Kickstarter, and just, you know, worrying on making good games?
Yeah, we talked a little bit to Tom Vassell and Arcane Wonders about possibly including Good Cop Bad Cop as a Dice Tower Essentials game. Okay. So that was the hardest decision that Clayton and I have had to make so far about whether or not to do it, and we decided not to. It would have sold so many more copies, at least initially. But you know, we're really, you know, trying to learn the business, and we're trying to learn the publishing side. We love designing, but our future is in the publishing business, and so that's we didn't want to give up the learning experience that would come along with getting Good Cop Bad Cop out to international publishers, expanding our network, you know, our network of playtesters and reviewers and everything that goes along with publishing a game. So if we were to give that up, it would have led to some short-term benefits, but we would have missed out on so many learning opportunities that we just weren't ready to give up.
That's amazing. I really respect that decision, because it's like, you know, it would have been easy to just say, okay, here, you guys take it and run with it, but you guys really sort of held on to your own baby, and you know, I'm sure you're going to reap the benefits of that. That's great.
Brian, we hope so.
Yeah. Brian, Chris, you guys have any questions?
Yeah, and what are the challenges of designing a social-based game like that, where there's the hidden roles and the bluffing? Are there some certain, you know, guidelines you have to follow to make it that style of game, or is it a lot more loosey-goosey than that?
For us, and I think it depends on the game, so we start a lot with what experience do we want to create for the people that are playing the game. So for us, like with Good Cop, Bad Cop, we knew that we wanted to avoid having a moderator. We wanted to make sure that everyone could be involved, everyone could play. We wanted it to be easy to teach, easy to learn, to pick up and play, so that you can play one game after the next. Which also gives you kind of that exit point if you decide you're going to move on to something else, you don't feel stuck in this game. I think one of the challenges is that they're probably the hardest type of game to complete a lot of solo play testing with. So to lay it out and kind of play through it yourself and see how it's going to go is almost impossible, because you're trying to imagine what each of these players is thinking at any moment and whether or not they trust each other, and to keep that all in mind is almost impossible. So I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges in the initial design, is you can only get to a certain point before you've got to get it on a table with a bunch of players.
Interesting. You know, what was the impetus of Good Cop, Bad Cop? Where'd you guys come up with the idea?
It's gone through quite a few revisions. I guess the origin of Good Cop, Bad Cop would be one of the games that Clayton and I have a lot of respect for is The Resistance. I'm betting you guys have played. The Resistance Avalon in particular, too. I've played more games of that than any other game. And I could play that all day. Like, I haven't done one of those 24-hour gaming marathons, but I could easily play that game for 24 hours straight. We love the experience that they created with that game. And Good Cop, Bad Cop has been compared to that game more than any other game, I think, which is a good thing. I think, because, that's what we wanted. We wanted to create something like that, where we just have some very simple rules, but, you know, the actual game that you're playing is almost completely outside of those rules. Where, you know, it's that metagame and really that connection with all the people that you're playing with that makes the experience memorable. And that's how I feel, you know, when I play games like One Night Ultimate Werewolf or The Resistance, where I don't remember when I win. I just remember, you know, some of the conversations that I've had with the other players. And so that's really what we wanted to make. So we just played around with a whole bunch of variations over hidden identity, Just being unsure of all the different roles and having multiple roles in the game and doing something too, even where, you know, where you have to close your eyes and, you know, some people open them and, we like that a lot, but we figured there'd be a better way to do it. And so that's where I guess the three integrity cards came from, where we, you know, it's a way to have, identities unknown and then, to be slowly revealed over time. And so when we started playing around with that, you know, it just, we realized that's it. That's going to be the core of our game. And we want to build on that. So I guess that's where it came from.
That's really cool. And yes, we are huge fans of the Resistance and Avalon. We host a weekly game night on Thursdays at our sponsor and gaming headquarters, the Adventure Game Store down here in South Florida. Brian, what, we play Avalon every single week, I would say, at least a couple times?
If not, the vast majority.
Yeah, I mean, we play that game pretty much every week and absolutely love it as well. And, you know, it's funny that you say that because when we were playing we played the set that you guys sent us with some of our, you know, gaming buddies at our Thursday night game night. And one of the first things someone said was, man, you know, this is very similar to Avalon, but it's cool because it's got, you know, some different variations on that. And, so it's funny that person said that and then you confirmed it tonight. I want to sort of take it now to, the Kickstarter realm, and sort of, you know, if there's any indie game developers out there that are aspiring to run a Kickstarter campaign and put together one of their own games, what would you say is the biggest challenge to doing that, and what do you see as the essential elements to running a successful Kickstarter campaign?
I would say, and even to me, I think back to what were some of our biggest challenges or biggest risks, and I think one of the biggest ones for us was, we realized that we needed to start small. So we had initially designed a game that had quite a few components, and we wanted to, you know, we had this big vision of how this game would be, and man, if we could really get all the components we wanted, how great it would be and how nice it would look. But then we realized that we hadn't run a Kickstarter before. We were just getting kind of a few quotes for what manufacturing would be. We didn't have a grasp just yet on what all the costs would be that would be involved. And had we moved forward with a game like that, we could have really cost ourselves a lot of money. And then when we moved ahead with Good Cop, Bad Cop, it's a 54 card game. So there's a lot of, manufacturers that, are very experienced in printing those types of games, reduces the cost a lot versus cardboard, wooden components, very small box, easy to ship. So once we scaled down to that, that's when we were really able to get a grasp on what our expenses would be and what we would need to really make it happen. And I think, that was probably the most important, key to our success with that campaign.
Yeah. And I would, add on to that too, just that, do a lot of research, and you know, don't be afraid to fail either. But just do a lot of research, and especially in ways to create a campaign or to fund a game in some way. I mean, like Clayton said, just start out small. But there's print-on-demand manufacturers out there, like the Game Crafter or Drive-Through Cards. There's quite a few of them now. Another one, Printer Studio, I want to say. But you can now manufacture a game one copy at a time, or 10 copies or 100. And the quality of these print-on-demand manufacturers are improving. You know, it seems like every time we order, we do our prototyping through them. And every time we order a new one, I feel like the box gets better, the card quality gets better. And really, it's getting hard to tell the difference between a print-on-demand game and one from a large print-run manufacturer. So now we're getting to the point. I think the Game Crafter is probably our favorite one of those, but you could put a game on Kickstarter, and if you get 50 backers, you know, you can fulfill it through the Game Crafter and print 50 copies. You know, whereas if you go for a large print run manufacturer, it's more like 1500 copies that you would have to print. And, you know, if you only have 50 backers, you know, you won't get that money up front through Kickstarter. You know, I don't recommend draining your savings to try to get that first print run and hope it works out for you, because it probably won't. But that's an option, or even, I know the Game Crafter will allow you, and drive-through cards too. You can just put your game up there. You don't have to go through Kickstarter or try to successfully fund it, or just do it on your own. You can just put your game up there and try to get people to give it a try. You know, and charge, you know, 10, 15 bucks for it, and get a few people to play it and then review it. If they like it, you know, put some comments on there and slowly build up so that, you know, you can build a following and either pitch it to a publisher or try to self-publish through Kickstarter or something else.
Very cool. And when you guys did the initial Good Cop, Bad Cop campaign, how long did it take from funding to delivery, and what were the challenges with that?
Clayton, do you remember the dates offhand?
So I'm trying to remember exactly when the campaign ended.
I want to say like May 10th.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And we were able to fulfill it. We had everything shipped out by, I think, mid to late August. So there was about 3 months in there, and the first delivery of cards that we got was actually printed on the wrong cardstock. So there was an additional delay there because we had to get a second shipment. So we were still able to, I think, get it delivered in a pretty timely manner, and we still were able to fulfill it by the delivery date that we had listed on Kickstarter, too.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, 3 months is nothing. I still have Kickstarters I backed 2 years ago that I haven't gotten yet. So you guys did a pretty good job, I think. Brian, do you have any questions?
How did you guys handle balancing? Because something I noticed about your game, something that actually happened to us, was one of our players was a little cheesed at first because it was uneven. Well, there's only two bad guys. Yeah, but no one knew that. So I thought you may not have meant to handle it that way, but I thought it was handled rather brilliantly. Even if the teams are a little uneven at first, you're so paranoid that you still don't trust that third person or that fourth person.
I think just to lay it out, I think we were playing with six players, right, Brian? And it ended up only being, just the way the cards ended up shuffling out, there was only two good people, the agent and then one other, you know, majority good cop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that reaction from people before. Some people, if you're on the losing team and it was uneven, that some people can be a little unhappy. I mean, the good thing is it's, you know, it's a 10-minute game, you know, so you can play again. But that is also the beauty of the game, too, in that you don't know when you start how many people are on your team. If it's a six-person game and you know for sure that it's going to be 3-on-3, that makes it a lot easier to deduce who is or is not on your team. And some of the highest emotional points in the game are when you're unsure of someone's loyalty. And, you know they have a gun and they have it pointed at you, but you're not sure if they're on your team or not. And that being completely unsure of whether they are or not is one thing that makes Good Cop, Bad Cop special. But I can see that it is frustrating, and that is one of the hardest things for me to see, is some frustration on someone's face when they feel that way after a game. But I do think it's for the best.
I agree with you. It's definitely for the best, because I was just shocked they even cared. I was like, I don't know who was on my team last game. I don't remember that at all. I just remembered the fun of that one guy betraying me at the last minute.
And the chances that it is going to, in a six-player game, I have a spreadsheet with all the probabilities, but I'm not sure what it is offhand of six players and having two of them have it be 2-on-4, but it's fairly low. I mean, on average, you're going to have even teams. So it is rare for that to happen.
Right, and like Brian said, the brilliance of it is that you're probably not even going to know that it was unbalanced until after the game ends. So it doesn't matter.
I remember the game where I had two corruption cards and I had the agent card, and thinking to myself, that's it, I'm doomed, because everyone's going to look at my corruption cards and they're not going to know that because I'm the agent, I'm automatically good no matter what. I'm just so doomed.
Yeah,
how did it turn out?
Yeah, I think you got targeted, but then something happened that sort of pulled the emphasis off you onto someone else.
Oh, yeah, I think we finally figured out who the kingpin was and yeah. Ganging up on him. That's what it was. I remember now.
Yeah, it was me.
And the Bombers and Traitors campaign too. The expansion will actually help with that, because before you, if you find out if say the teams are uneven and it's 2-on-4, the team of two now won't just get, you know, mowed down very quickly, because you can't just take someone out, because you have to be sure that there isn't a traitor lurking around, because, if they're still alive when, you know, say your leader, is eliminated, then they win alone. Nobody else wins. So now you have to spend a little more time investigating. Either if the teams are uneven or somebody gets, one of the leaders is discovered very early in the game, this helps that situation, because now you do have to spend more time, and that extra time spent gives the team with fewer numbers or who had their leader exposed right away, just enough time to hopefully find the other leader, and possibly even, shoot them. So it buys them some time, which is one of the best parts about this expansion.
Yeah, I love the expansion. Can you explain a little more the Bomber and Traitor's role? Obviously, the Bomber would be akin to like the Tanner in Werewolf. He's trying to get killed, right? And then the Traitor, and this is where I'm a little confused. The Traitor wants to betray his leader, or is he just trying to stay alive?
The traitor is just trying to stay alive. So the traitor wants either of the leaders to be eliminated. So if that happens and the traitor's still in the game, then the traitor wins and everybody else loses.
I gotcha. Yeah, I think I had that wrong. I thought that the traitor was trying to get his faction's leader killed while staying alive, obviously.
And he has no faction. Yeah, he has no faction. Even if he has two honest cards and one crooked, he is not an honest cop like he would be in the base game. He's on his own team. So he is, you might think he's an honest cop, but really he's a traitor.
Very cool. Very cool. So we've talked at length about Good Cop, Bad Cop. It's very clear we all love it and think that everyone should go out and buy it. What other projects are you guys working on, Brian and Clayton, that our listeners might be interested in?
Well, we are prototyping some new games. We also signed a game by another designer, so we'll be publishing it. It's Jeremy Commander, who's in the Bay Area here, came up with a game. It's a similar genre game. It's a team-based hidden identity game. There's a little bit of deduction in there as well. So that one is will be coming out this year for sure. So that'll be another Kickstarter campaign. So we've been working on the development of that one. Of course, fulfilling our New Salem campaign, too. That's almost into the manufacturing phase. So that'll be out before too long as well. That's another social game, too. That's a set collection and some hidden identities as well. We're really sticking to that niche. And then independent of Overworld Games, I just launched a podcast and vidcast called The Forbidden Limb, where we talk about the business side of the industry. It's kind of a neglected area, I think. I think there's a ton of designers and publishers, or you know, at least designers out there who have a game, you know, kind of their game that they've been working on, and they're not really sure how to bring that to market. And so what we try to do is just talk about all of the topics that I think those folks will care about. So marketing, distribution, you know, how to run a Kickstarter campaign, how to play test, how to build buzz, that kind of thing. So it's going to be really dry to some people, but to those who actually want to get into this business of designing or publishing a game, we're hoping it's exactly what you want. It's very short. It's most episodes are about 20 minutes long. We keep it really short, and we really want to value the time of our listeners. So we just try to pack as much content into it as possible. So that's The Forbidden Limb. You can find it on iTunes, and we have a YouTube channel too. We record it and film it too. So that's independent of Overworld Games, but something I've been working on.
Very cool. What about you, Clayton?
Well, I've pretty much been working with Brian on getting ready for the new game that we signed a designer for, and really just working on the Bomber Traders campaign. We've got another campaign, New Salem, that will be hopefully going to print soon. The artwork is almost completed for that, so I've been working a lot on putting that together too. So pretty much just working on the projects that we already have or are coming down the line for Overworld Games.
And Clayton handles a lot of the he does the art direction and a lot of the graphic design as well. So usually, you know, once we get past a certain point, he takes care, he kind of takes it from there. So he's much more involved in New Salem, getting that ready to go. And in some of the changes for, you know, like the second edition of Good Cop, Bad Cop that's coming up, preparing our Kickstarter campaign page and that kind of thing. So, a lot of the stuff I kind of, get to do playtesting for some of the future stuff and he's working on really the current projects.
Awesome. Yeah. I am a backer of New Salem and I am very much anticipating, getting my copies. And I have to commend you. I mean, that was what drew me to New Salem was the art. I really love the art in that game, and I'm looking forward to getting my hands on my copies to play. Sounds like you guys got a pretty full plate, and you know, we definitely are looking forward to all your new projects, and you know, we hope that when your new games come out, you'll come back on the podcast and talk to us about that one. You know, those as well. And, you know, we wish you the best of luck, you know, going forward with all your projects.
Thanks a ton, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, guys. We really appreciate having you on here and your time. And, Brian, Chris, is there any other questions you guys have?
I don't have a question per se, but I just wanted to irradiate? I just wanted to repeat what I said when I was playtesting, which was I loved the theme. The theme seemed to be a really awesome match with the style of the game.
Yeah, the good cop, bad cop, and the traitors and all that stuff. I like it as well.
I'm just impressed that such a simple expansion can add so much to it. Because we had players, when we were kind of first exploring it, doing things that I had not even considered. And I consider myself pretty decent player. I was shocked to just be so dumbfounded by some of the stuff that this allows you to keep hidden.
I have a quick question for you guys.
Sure.
So just out of curiosity, I know a lot of the, especially kind of hardcore tabletop gamers, a lot of them do have designs that they've been working on or have worked on. Or have you guys tried that at all?
Gansomancer, right? Right, Brian?
We have an idea. We're finally to the point where it's almost playable, and I'm just crossing my fingers that it's fun in the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's Nerd Extravaganza, so the working title is Gansomancer, and we put together some just basic components, and you know, we're going to start incorporating it into our Thursday night game night, and just, you know, seeing how people react and seeing what kind of fine tuning we could do, and you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool, and I think you should definitely just go for it and try to make it a reality, but also know that you know, if you do make a game, it's probably not going to be this one. So, you know, if you get to a point where, you know, you think you might have to kind of start over, just do that, because really your next game is really going to be the one that has a chance at being and no disrespect at all, but
I'm not going to hit it out of the park first time.
You'll learn so much from this, though, you know, from doing it. And so I guess that would be the only thing that I would say, just as maybe a little piece of advice.
So, like, when writers have a trunk novel, because that's their first novel that sucks that nobody's going to see, game designers have their own trunk game?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, that's something that, you know, I've kind of thought about, but it's actually one of my good friends here, Jeremy Commander, who kind of told me that in you know, he talked about that a lot. So, yeah, I think it's the best piece of advice for someone who's just kind of just starting out.
Very cool. Thank you. We got a lot of, you know, coals in the fire right now, but, that's something that's definitely on the radar. So that thanks for the advice. Wow. So, this was a very, informational packed episode. Learned a lot about indie gaming, learned a lot about your guys' new games and projects. Is there anything else you want to tell the audience about?
Well, if you ever want to learn more about Overworld Games, you can go to overworldgames.com. You know, check us out on Facebook and Twitter, too. You can find either of us on Twitter or the Overworld Games account. Whatever your favorite social media platform, you can find us there.
I encourage all of our listeners to do that. And that wraps up episode 139 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast.
Thank you guys for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much. We really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah,
it was great. Thanks.
Thank you.
And take a look at that video. We're sort of new to the video game reviews, but you know, this is, I think, maybe the seventh or eighth one we've done.
All right, cool. Oh. Yeah, can't wait. Thanks so much for taking the time to do that too. I know those, it can take a long time to film and edit and, you know, prepare for those. So we really appreciate it.
Brian's the workhorse. I just go in and I just talk shit for, you know, 30 minutes on film and then let him, and then he edits it down. He does all the hard work.
Yeah, Brian makes us look good and sound good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I appreciate it, Brian. Thanks a ton.
Anytime.
All right, guys. Well, it's been a pleasure. And you know, Brian, keep in touch, you know, shoot me an email if you need anything. And, you know, let's definitely stay in touch for your next project. We'd love to have you on again.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks a ton. Let's definitely keep in touch.
Perfect. All right, guys, take it easy.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Vitasen.
What was that?
That was me saying, ach, Vitasen.
Ah. Oh. Yeah, I didn't get that either. The episode may be over, friends, but the fun doesn't have to stop there. Be a good cop and head over to nerdstravaganza.com to check out all of our content, back episodes, YouTube videos, movie reviews, and all other kinds of good stuff. Also, shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com and let us know what you think about that content and anything else you might have on your mind.
Don't be a traitor. Head over to Stitcher or iTunes and rate us and leave a comment.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us on Google+, and join the Nerdstravaganza HQ on Facebook.
It's the bomb.
It's the bomb.
It's the bomb.
Bomb, man.